Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the ManaPro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Tuesday, April 24th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have a fabulous show for you today, this Tuesday, the fourth Tuesday of the month. We've got Christine Heinrich that's going to be here. She's a wonderful author, just a really wonderful person. And she's going to be here talking about a particular breed that you may or may not be familiar with. Today she's actually going to be talking about, let me get it over here because I had the Lamonas. So that's going to be talking about that today, a breed that you may not be familiar with, and she's going to teach us all about those chickens and history of them and the whole nine yards. So we really are in for a treat today with Christine Heinrich, again, author of How to Raise Poultry and How to Raise Chickens, both endorsed by the FFA, the Future Farmers of America. So we're really, really proud to have her on. And as I get over here and look at the switchboard, wow, I can't believe it. It looks like it's actually time, it's a long time overdue, to bring on, you guessed it, my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, and let's not forget, poultry and compost queen. Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, so good to have you today. I was hoping that with this great topic and Christine Heinrich being here, that you would be here as well, because y'all just, you know, with y'all jet-setting all over the country in your private Learjets and bodyguards, right, and your let's see, what are they called? What do you call them?
Cabana Boys, I think.
Yeah, Cabana Boys. We've used that term before. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, dear. Well, I have to tell you, I am traveling. I'm 35 in Ohio, traveling here with my little dog Beamer. So I'm not sure how the signal will be, but I'll keep it as much as I can. But to have a wonderful visit with my mother.
Yes, she turned 96.
94. 94 years old. Yeah, she's amazing, and we had a big birthday party. She cooked about 3/4 of the meal herself. Wore herself out, but she did it, and it was really good. So we've had a really, really great time this weekend, and spent some quality time with her and my brother and rest of the family. So it's been a good trip, really good trip.
That's so glad. Will you drive careful? I know all about connectivity. Yesterday we had a horrible connectivity. I didn't have a lot of time to get set up. We're on the road for 2 weeks. We're in another town, so I just wasn't sure what all we would have. Thought we'd have good connectivity, but we ended up not. So we postponed Peter Brown and his continuation of his series on the art of incubation Wednesday. So today we've got Christine.
Oh, okay. So it's tomorrow?
Yeah, so today we'll have Christine Heinrich. Tomorrow we'll have Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, continue talking about incubation. Thursday we'll have Dr. McRae, and then Friday will be Fun Friday. And I think I'm going to have a special co-host Fun Friday, Tilly's Nest. I'll have him basically all week. In fact, he'll be back in here probably in the next 20 minutes, and so you'll probably hear a little goo-goo gaga in the background and whatnot. So this Fun Friday, Tilly's Nest had a Facebook fan contest earlier in the year, and one of the prizes was the co-host for a day. So I think we may have a good co-host coming out this Friday. Yeah, so we've got a lot of prizes to give away this Friday. Speaking of prizes, want to again remind everybody that time is running out for the Chicken Coops for Classroom contest. We're the, again, only ones on the planet that are doing this. We're very proud to do this. And you can nominate a local public or private school in your area, or one that you know of across the country. It doesn't really have to be in your area. To win this fabulous prize package, it's going to include fertile hatching eggs. It's going to include an incubator, a brooder, actual chicken coop, and then several educational books. So we've got that awesome grand prize package, and you only have until this coming Monday, April the 30th at midnight, to nominate a local school, public or private of your choice. And then the following Friday, May 4th, we'll actually announce the winner, and we might be able to see. If I'm still having technical problems, we actually may postpone that until the following Monday, because I want to be able to give them a call and surprise them on the radio show live. So if we're still having technical problems that Friday the 4th, I think we'll be back into our homestead on that Friday the 4th, so it shouldn't be a problem. But hey, let me tell you how folks to how you can enter. And we've had really tons and tons of entries, but go ahead and hey, they can't win if you don't enter. Very simple. Send us an email, contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, that's contest@chickenwhisperer.net. In the subject line of the email, please put Chicken Coop Contest. And then in the email itself, we need the school name, the school address, the school phone number, and a little snippet, maybe four or five sentences, maybe a paragraph, of why you think this school is deserving of this great grand prize package. Do they already have a recycle program? Do they already have compost bins? Do they already have raised gardens? Are they already doing, you know, baby chicks but need an actual coop to keep them in so they can do that? So just kind of a little snippet of why you think they're deserving of this awesome prize. And we'll have Tuesday, May 1st, we'll get that into the judges' hands, and then we'll just decide on who's going to be the big winner, and we'll announce the winner and call them live on the air Friday, May 4th. Really looking forward to that. Definitely doing that. So, and of course, all this week we've got great guests coming on the show. So glad you're with us today, Pat. Glad you had a wonderful birthday experience with your mom, 94. How
yep.
awesome is that? The whole family. That's fabulous. And
yeah, really is a blessing.
Really is, absolutely. Wow, I can't just imagine what, you know, if I could live to 94, man, I've got a lot of stuff I could do between now and then.
That's right. Well, we were talking, too, about the changes that she had seen in her life. And, you know, it is just absolutely astonishing how it was when she was born versus now. For example, when she was born, her mother could not vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's a jaw dropper, isn't it? I mean, we've come so far in rights movement. They had just had to crank up telephone. You had to actually crank it.
<That's> awesome.
And yeah, it just goes on and on. So we had to spend a lot of time just chatting about that, and you know, how things might be coming up to change in the future. How communication skills are changing. She thinks that a lot of the younger kids have such poor communication skills, but we were saying, well, no, they're different. They're incredibly highly skilled. It's just it's a fully different way of communicating, and she didn't like that. But it's true. Yeah. So anyway,
yeah,
it was a really rich weekend.
Rumor has it out there that they're not even teaching cursive writing anymore to kids, which is surprising to me. So I guess we're just not going to teach writing at all because you can all do it on your iPad and your iPhone until, of course,
or you can talk. Now the voice
recognition
just talk it in. Yeah.
Truly amazing. So I don't know if we're going
to... That seems pretty weird, though, that the standards of, what is it, the SOLs, the standards of learning would not include cursive writing? Do they just do printing then? I mean, they have to write.
I've heard rumors of that before. Just they're not, you know, going to look at not teaching cursive writing anymore. And a lot of times it's not even required when you write a paper. I can remember writing papers, and it's just nuts. So all kinds of different changes. And me and Jen were talking about that yesterday about all the things they have to do just here, offering the CRCT testing to the students. They got third graders, fifth graders, and eighth graders taking this test. It is required they have to pass it to go to the next grade at those three grade levels, and the security involved, and, you know, all the scandals that have been out there with teachers changing the answers across the country, and, you know, getting busted for that, and then all the things that they have to provide special for all the kids with possible learning disabilities to just reading the test to them to, you know, it's amazing some of the things that they have to do. And so we definitely had a really good conversation about that on the way home from here yesterday. And so it was just a lot of interesting questions I had to ask, just seeing how this was going on.
Times are changing.
Yeah, it really is. So, perfect. Well, hey, I've got about 12:15, and I believe Christine is on the line. So let's not waste any more more time. Let's get her on, and she can start sharing her knowledge with us, as she always does, the fourth Tuesday of every month. And we'll go ahead and see if I, well, if my computer works. Here we go, and bring her live. Christine Heinrich, welcome back to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Andy. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. We'll have a, another guest host here probably in about 10 or 15 minutes when Caleb comes in. My wife for 2 weeks is doing some CRCT testing. So I'm trying to hold the fort down as far as getting the show on and then, of course, watching my 10-month-old. So there'll be a little challenging here in a few more minutes, but we'll do definitely what we can. So definitely
we'll get them started early.
So no problem. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So hope you're doing well and enjoyed the again last month we talked about Gutenberg. I know you missed that, Pat. We had Christine on to help teaching us about how to prepare the perfect goose
and
it was a fabulous show. And so she's back with us today and going to be talking about a particular breed here and tell us all about it. And some people may not be familiar with it.
Well, certainly not. The Lamona is a breed that was created at the beginning of the 20th century in the 1920s and 30s by Harry Lehman, who was a significant man over at the USDA. He was their leader for a long time and a senior poultryman at the Bureau of Animal Husbandry, which actually no longer exists because it's been subsumed in other parts of the USDA, but he was honored by having this named for him. He was the moving force behind creating it, and the goal was to create a good dual purpose breed for the commercial American farm. And, you know, we think of this now, and, you know, I kind of recoil from that because what we're thinking of now is these horrible industry sheds filled with hundreds of thousands of Cornish rock crosses that can hardly walk. But that was not what was going on at that time. That was, this predated that. And he was looking for, you know, the production farmer who might have 1,000 birds or so, but they would be outdoors. These birds needed to be good foragers. They're very nice all-around birds. And then they were eclipsed relatively soon by the 1950s. There were not very many of them left. And they essentially probably have disappeared. Whether there's any of that original breeding around anymore is very doubtful. But people were still enthusiastic about these birds, and so there have been rumors circulating. Now, you know how it can be with poultry people. They do like a good story.
That's right. And they can tell a good story, too.
That's right. They can, and that's part of the fun. And they love to gossip about each other, too, both good and bad.
That's right.
All kinds.
Yeah.
And so there's rumors have been circulating for quite a while that people somewhere were either had some that they'd gotten from a lost flock. And, you know, those are kind of urban myth stories. Oh, there's a flock of, you know, Lamonas somewhere. But the fact of the matter is it can be true. And
that's right.
It's actually, it's because we don't know what's out there. And people don't always, you know, if grandpa's got a flock, he may, you know, the grandchildren may not live in the city and not even know what he's got anymore. And this does happen. It happened to Pat. You're probably familiar with the Chanticleer story, since you've got some Chanticleers.
12 families kept the flock, kept the breed alive after
it was declared by
the agriculture school.
Right. Yeah, they had announced that they were gone, and they thought they were. And but there were flocks of them out there that just, you know, no one had taken official notice of. So this can happen.
And they've made an amazing comeback, too. I mean, they're really back on the rise to where they're not that uncommon. Yeah.
It has, yeah. And they're just a wonderful bird. as you know.
Oh, they are. I love my chanticleers. Yeah.
And
I've got
like
about 25 of them myself right now.
Do you really?
I
well,
do,
that's
including
great.
Some white ones.
Oh, have you posted some photos of those?
No, I haven't. I should do that.
Oh, yeah, do that. We want to see those. That'll be great. Yeah, so this can certainly happen. It's not impossible, but I don't think that's what's going on with Lamona's. We'll remain to see. Maybe someone will come out of the woodwork. But what Steve Gerdes out in Illinois did was he took the recipe, more or less, that Harry Lehman had used, because, of course, this is within a century, and so we have pretty good records of just how he worked with them, and applied that to his own birds and redeveloped the Lamona. He was working with silver gray Dorkings, white Plymouth Rocks, and single comb white Leghorns.
Wow.
And yeah, he went around, he was trying to find the birds that were most likely to produce the kind of bird that the Lamona was. So he was looking for Plymouth Rock roosters whose backs were too long for the rock standard and whose legs were too short. And he found some of those through other breeders. Steve Gerdes has been a breeder for a long time. He's, I believe he's a poultry judge. He's been very active. So he's got a good eye. He knows what he's looking for. And he had the contacts to ask around and try and find exactly what he wanted. He used those silver gray Dorkings. They also have a long back and a deep breast, and that's what he wanted. So he mated the Dorkings to the rocks and the Dorkings to the Leghorns. And then he took the white birds that had the most Lamona traits and started breeding them. And eventually, he's been at this, I think he said, for about 8 years now. He does not consider these birds finished as Lamona's in any sense, but he was ready to come out and tell the world about it, which was really interesting because I don't know Steve, and he just emailed me one day and said, I've got these birds and I'm ready to talk about them. So it's in this current issue of Backyard Poultry Magazine, and he sent pictures. And this is a very interesting, it's interesting not only for the Lamonas themselves, but for what it tells us about what's in the genetics, that there's a lot going on in there, and that for the breeder who's interested and willing to put the time and effort in, you can achieve all kinds of results. They do have the yellow skin, that's popular, and they lay white eggs. That by the 1930s, the white eggs were the most popular, and those were the ones that the consumers wanted. Lamonas are well feathered. You know, they were developed out in the Midwest. Actually, they were developed on the East Coast, but they had in mind a lot of those Midwestern farms. So they're very well feathered, and they manage in the cold quite well. These are not the kind of birds that are fragile like the commercial birds are today. These are a sturdy, hardy bird, and they certainly are an interesting advent on the modern poultry scene. Am I still with you guys? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Hear someone. I hear the co-host
has joined
us. Yeah,
that's why it takes me a second to actually take the phone off mute and get back in. So I'm calling in via phone. I got a lot better connection when I call via the satellite phone than I do the calling through internet and going through the switchboard in New York. So it's all good. But now how about the comb size as far as someone who may be living up north or in a colder climate versus the southern climate?
Well, they have a medium single comb. Now, they don't mention that. I assume that this is a comb that is not terribly subject to freezing because they are designed for that. But he didn't really comment on that, and it is a medium-sized single comb. It's not like a Chanticleer. They also have medium-sized wattles. So this is something that you'd want to look into, and if you live in a place where it's really cold, maybe take some measures against it by putting Vaseline on or having a little bit of heat inside the coop.
Mm-hmm. Pat, you're back live now. I saw that you had got disconnected.
Oh, thank
live.
You.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I hit a pocket and just closed me out there. You know, I think Christine, this is really good case study because it says how incredibly important to save foundation breeds like the Dorkings are. And that silver Dorking, I know, is on the critical list right now of becoming extinct itself.
Yes, you're right, Pat. You're absolutely right, because this would have been impossible if he wasn't able to find some of those birds around somewhere. And even the Leghorn, you know, he was not using the commercial Leghorns. And those traditional breed, the Leghorn kind of, you know, gets a bad rap because one thinks of it as those sad birds that are in those egg cages, but that's not at all what a traditional breed Leghorn is like. They're beautiful birds as well as very productive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, Don Schreier does the brown Leghorns, and
right.
They are absolutely stunning. In fact, I was thinking
right.
about calling it, but get a few of them. But they're multicolored. I mean, pretty much all the commercial Leghorns are white.
Right.
And pretty scruffy looking, really.
Yeah, it's not a breed that you would think in terms of when you see that, but they actually are very beautiful and wonderful egg layers. And we need to keep that strain around because otherwise we'll be left with nothing but those commercial birds, which really, you know, are not really as useful. They're being put to a terrible kind of use. You know, Joel.
I know, makes you wonder where animal husbandry really went, doesn't it? Since they took it out of the USDA as a separate department.
That's an interesting thing to think about. Joel Salatin today on Grist has a very interesting op-ed about sustainable meat. Apparently the New York Times ran an op-ed by someone named James McWilliams. I think he's written before, trying to poke holes in sustainable agriculture and claiming that it can't raise enough food to feed the world and so forth, when in fact sustainable methods raise much more food these monocultures, and they also preserve the topsoil and create a better world for us. So Joel Salatin has done a great job as a spokesperson for that, and he points out today that in this op-ed, which I'll post the link on my blog, that we need to close the loop about our food scraps. You know, about 50% of our food actually goes either directly or indirectly into landfills, and this is just
a ridiculous use of
our food. And it's not doing us any good, and it's creating problems in the landfills. And we need to have chickens who would eat that up and turn it into eggs for us.
There you go. And compost and topsoil.
And compost and topsoil, exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Christine, weren't you a spokesperson for all this at Earth Day there in San Luis Obispo?
I was. I was over there. They had a big event at the Botanical Garden in San Luis Obispo this weekend, and there were a lot of people turned out. We didn't have as many at the chicken event as I was hoping for, but, you know, you never know. Yeah, things sometimes don't work out that way. But there were a lot of enthusiastic people who were there, and of course I brought two chickens. I brought Oprah, of course, with
all
her
right.
star quality,
uh-huh.
and I brought her friend Blondie, who's my Aww. Wife working, and they were a big hit.
And did you have her just on your arm so people could pet her easily?
I did,
all
and
right.
I brought her around the room, and that was interesting because there were one or two people who were sort of intimidated, and they didn't want to touch her. And I thought,
there's
you know,
always
this
one
is
or two, yeah.
Yeah, this is the value of this, is to just show people. You know, we talk about chickens all the time, and I felt like, you know, it seems kind of obvious to say, well, this is a chicken.
Right.
And there it is. And people really don't understand that.
They've never seen a live chicken, so many of them, much less touched one, or seen one handled in that way, that they're so docile.
Right. And I'll tell you, the two girls, they were ready to sleep through the whole thing. They actually took a nap for a while. They couldn't have been calmer. Interestingly enough, two of the people who were there mentioned a problem that I haven't heard of before. They had neighbors who complained about the clucking of their hens as a noise problem.
Huh.
Yeah, I just thought, wow, that's...
bark.
Exactly.
No, I've never heard that either, Christine. They can cluck, but it's no louder than really human conversation.
It isn't.
It's not like people shouting at each other at all.
It isn't loud at all, and I thought, this really sounds like some kind of overreaction, some oversensitivity about something. I suggested to both of them, you know, try giving them some nice fresh eggs and see if you can just make friends with them. Cause
I think a lot of times
sounded...
when that happens, they're just trying to reach for some type of excuse. I mean, a lot of times if the chickens aren't allowed to begin with, like I've seen several times where their complaint is not smell because they don't smell. The complaint is not noise because the hens aren't noisy. The complaint is not anything except for, here's the complaint, they have chickens. I mean, that's the complaint.
Yeah.
They have chickens and they're not
right.
supposed to. So there's no nuisance. There's no specific complaint other than they have chickens and they're not supposed to. That's the complaint. But there's no nuisance involved with it. And so with this, it could be somewhere where there's really no complaint, but they just have to come up with something. And so when they do hear the chickens, it's like, you know, if that was me, then I would, you know, and my neighbor complained because once a day my hens may cluck a little bit or cackle because they've laid an egg, then I can assure you that probably every morning at about 8:30, I would make sure on that side of the house, I would make sure that my lawn is meticulously maintained daily with a weed eater. Clucking hens are my weed eater, and then my lawnmower, and then my Harley, and you know, if you want me to, I'll get some hound dogs. I'd be more than happy to. I've been wanting to get into the hobby. And I'll get 4 or 5 hound dogs back there and a mechanical squirrel and just see, you know, if you want to talk noise, you know. So it's, you know, compare apples to apples and pick your battles. So, you know, I'd be more than happy to have you listen to my weed eater every morning at 7:30 if you'd rather do that.
Ever the diplomat there, Whisper. I mean, try giving him eggs first. Just try it, you know. Oh, dear.
Yes. That has crossed my mind because my neighbor who complained about our rooster, not frequently, but they do have landscapers in with their leaf blowers on occasion, which are just deafening. And, that's somehow that's okay, but the clucking of a chicken is something. I think you're right, though, Andy. I think they're just looking for something to complain about.
That's true. They just, for whatever reason, have that underlying problem, whether they just don't like it or their friends that come over for tea might see them and think, ooh, they live in a place where there's chickens or property values or, you're right, all these things that don't exist. And so they're just looking for something like, oh, I can have them, you know, clucking or what have you. So, yeah, exactly. That's probably my 2 cents worth on that.
One of the things that Joel Salatin points out in his editorial, he says, in the perfect world, Polyface, which is his farm, would not sell eggs. Instead, every kitchen, both domestic and commercial, would have enough chickens to handle all the scraps, and this would eliminate the entire egg industry and the current heavy grain feeding paradigm.
Wouldn't that be great if every time any backyard chicken keeper or small farm person or and him as well, every time they were at a farmer's market, every time they, you know, had somebody come buy eggs, the first question is, now, why are you buying my eggs? how come you're not getting them from your backyard? I think that's an absolutely awful point. If we all started doing
neighbor.
That, when
yeah.
Hey, I need to get another dozen eggs from you, you know, for the $3.50, $4, whatever it is, and say, no, why do you keep doing this? Why don't you have your own chickens? Why don't you provide your own eggs in your backyard? Why are you buying them from me?
try to get
you know, another avenue of getting more in backyards. I think that's a fabulous scenario.
Well, I think in many areas it can come to that because of the concerns about health and just having the healthy foods. We're seeing, look what we've seen just in the last 3 years, Whisper, since this show's been on the show, how the interest in having family foxes exploded.
Yes. Yes, things
yeah.
have really changed. You know, when I was first keeping chickens 20 years or so ago, it was really odd. Now it's really, you know, people are very open to it and are excited about chickens. And
yep.
I that's all of us have done our part with that, too, as ambassadors to the rest of the world to explain about how this can work and what a difference it can make.
Mm-hmm. It's happening. It's happening yard by yard and city by city as they change their laws. So we can get there. I mean, it doesn't take that much to fulfill a local egg shed to have eggs as well as meat. You know, we went through those numbers. So that's
yeah,
kind
that's
of a
true.
Kind of exciting. Yep.
That's true.
Yeah.
And, of course, creating that topsoil, which is really that's such an important area that I don't think people really appreciate. As reading a book on water, and it turns out that the thirstiest crop that we raise in America is turf grass. Yeah, and it turns out turf grass has actually superseded citrus fruit as the biggest export from Florida. That's
You're
the
kidding.
Biggest crop. No, I was surprised at that, too. That's
Where are they
right.
sending it to?
Well, they're sending it to golf courses, to new developments, to highway verges. They're sending it all over the place. Yeah,
that doesn't surprise
is...
me. A couple of years ago, we went down and actually, we were taking a cruise, and we stopped, and we were going through some of these orchards, and they were just filled full of oranges and grapefruit that were just rotting, and there'd be a big sign, you know, that would say, you know, for sale or whatever. They just walked away, and all of this, I mean, acres and acres and acres of stuff. Then you'd go by, and you'd see a sod farm, you know, super sod, and it'd be just all this zoysia or Bermuda or whatever.
Yeah.
They'd be out there. They'd be out there working on all of that. By next door, there'd be the big fruit orchards that just... fruit just hanging there rotting on the vines. It was a shame.
See, this is a crazy world we live in. We gotta reorganize this. This can't make sense for us when there are hungry people in the world.
Right.
Well, we don't need an evolution anymore. What we need, I think, is a revolution to where we really go back to local foods and backyard kitchens and local gardeners. And we're seeing that. It's happening. Seed sales are off the scale. Chickens are up. People are more getting interested in maybe the homestead hog and little goats. So we're in interesting times that way. And
we
it's
sure
going to have
are.
To happen because we're going to hit peak soil and peak oil. We talked about that before on the show, that both those peak topsoil might have already gone by as
I
far
think
as that
you're
happens.
Right.
So it's exciting times. And,
it sure is. It sure is.
That's why chickens are such the enablers. They're not just eggs and feathers. They're really the enablers.
Well,
yeah.
and the Lamona is a good example of that, too, in that these birds were bred naturally by selective breeding, by choosing
uh-huh.
the birds, by breeders with good eyes. They were not developed by scientifically inserting genes of one breed into another breed or from one species into another species.
Or from one virus into another species.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Geez.
You know, we've had the disaster of Roundup Ready corn and soybeans, which, of course, Monsanto swore could not possibly result in Roundup Ready weeds, but which, in fact, has. And
nature's smarter than that.
All over.
Yeah, I mean, why do they think that the, and of course they keep saying it's not so, but one of the things I saw when I was down at Cinema Verde, the environmental film festival down in Florida, was a film called Scientists Under Attack. The way the scientists who made those points and tried to bring their own research to the fore to comment on how this was going to affect crops and topsoil were attacked by Monsanto and were driven out of their jobs, really. And they had film of these horrible fields that are just filled with weeds that simply can't be killed. Well, of course, the industry, Dow Chemical, now has an answer for that. They have developed Agent Orange-ready corn.
Oh,
I've heard about that.
Isn't
You're
not
horrible?
Serious, are you?
I couldn't possibly make this up. No, this is absolutely true. Dow Chemical, Dow Chemical also makes Agent Orange. And so they can not only sell the farmers the seed, but then they can sell them the Agent Orange, which can then be spread all over these fields and all over this corn, which I don't know if it's designed to be fed to people or to livestock, and just increase the amount of chemicals in our environment and in our food system. And this is currently under review and is awaiting approval by the USDA, and I'm certainly hoping that they do not approve this and that they speak for the public and the consumer instead of the industry.
Sounds like a good article to write, Christine.
Huh?
You sounds like a good article for you to write with your environmental journalism.
That's right. There's more. Well, I'll certainly post those links anyway.
Gosh, Agent Orange on our food crops.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Some of it goes up through the food chain. It gets in the water. It just doesn't stop with the plant like they're trying to say it does.
Certainly does not.
Golly. How can anybody even think it'd be a good thing? How does that come up in a conversation at a board meeting? You know what? You know, we've got all this leftover Agent Orange, and we've got all these, let's spray it on some food and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that come up in a board meeting at Dow? And how can they even think that would be a good thing? It just amazes me.
Well, you know, it's a more extreme step, and their mindset is not to think in terms of healthy systems. Their mindset is to think in terms of what can they sell, how can they make money, and how can they produce these new items, their new products. That's one of the problems with organic farms and with CSAs. Is that, you know, broccoli doesn't have a lobbyist in Washington, but Agent Orange does.
Wow.
Interesting.
Well, more seed libraries, seed lending libraries, with open pollinated, non-hybrid, non-GMO seeds. For us, the other 99% of us that want to have our healthy food. Oh, Lord.
That is for sure true. Well, Pat, I was entertained by your idea about cabana boys.
Yeah, you like that, do you?
Well, that sounded like something a little different. What's
with
going on out there in Ohio?
right. Yeah, well, I think Whisper has enough imagination for both of us when it comes to how we travel. You know? Yeah, I've never been in a Learjet, but I wouldn't mind taking a ride in one. Yeah.
That would be exciting.
Yeah. So now, is there anything else with these chickens? I mean, have you've heard of any more rumors with the that they're not extinct or someone has had them? Is there any way to trace some of that down?
You know, people have been looking a lot. I've had inquiries out there, but of course, one of the limitations of that is that they tend to, you know, the inquiries tend to be through contacts, you know, judges at shows. And while those are good contacts, if someone is friends with a judge and says, you know, I'm working on this project, but I don't want to make it public yet. Of course, that
right.
person's going to respect that, you know, and I don't expect them
to. Well, maybe not. I don't know.
It is tempting. You know, they say three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead. But,
right, yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, it would be nice to think it is possible, and it's also wonderful to think that we can recreate it
exactly.
within a relatively short time, like 20 years or 10 years, that some of
that
these breeds
right.
can still be recreated, assuming we have the foundation ones there. So there's
assuming those birds are there, that's right.
Yeah.
And he was able to find them. Yeah, Harry Lehman started back in 1912, and I think these birds were admitted to the standard in 1933. So it was just about 20 years that it took to go from starting the project to acceptance. So that was pretty fast.
Well, that was about the same what it was for the Chanticleer, too.
Was
it
really?
Yep. It might even have been a little shorter. And how they started with the Chanticleer is Brother Wilfred identified either four or five other farms to raise them, and they were sworn not to sell any of the birds. That what they would do is they at the end of each season they would go, they select the best of the birds, and then the others would be processed. But they had to be processed and then sold. They couldn't be sold as live birds. So he really kept a strong control on the offspring as they came along.
That's
how they were able to
yeah.
keep it pure and for their focus, just laser level focus on what they
uh-huh.
wanted. And I've heard some concern being said about the Buckeyes now, that they're sort of out of the breed recovery program in a way, and that they selected primarily as a meat bird. I mean, they're dual purpose, but more for meat than on the egg side. And I was talking to Jeanette Berenger saying, well, they'd like to get it balanced, so there's still more work to do on that breed, and they're wondering where the resources are now to bring the people together to do that. The education.
Well, that's an interesting problem. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I have heard most of the people that I've talked to about Buckeyes, well, they're such a big bird, you know, that it is really tempting. And and most of the people I know are working with them as meat birds.
Right. And they were intended,
but
of course,
a pitfall.
Yeah, so we got to get back to the form and function and that whole sort of thing. So, and maybe they'll just end up as more the meat birds. I mean, that's certainly happened with quite a few of the breeds. Some have gone totally towards eggs and some totally towards meat, and so you end up with different strains. You
that's
have
true.
The meat Buckeye versus the egg Buckeye.
That's right, yes.
And they're totally different body types.
Yes, that absolutely could happen. And
so who knows what the bird of the future really will all be, you know, just so they're not in a petri dish.
As I say, maybe right. we can have the new breed coming in 2013, Agent Orange Buckeye.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Right.
That
yeah,
Agent Orange, you know, my brother was in Vietnam, and he was exposed to Agent Orange, and now he's having some health problems, and they were reflected back that it might be due to that, and that was, what, since 1968?
Absolutely.
30-plus years ago, these residues are still causing chaos in a biological body, or in my brother's
absolutely.
Body.
Absolutely. You know, it's a terrible chemical, and a lot of people have been seriously damaged by it, and this is absolutely not the right direction that we want to go with our agriculture or our country. We don't need to be spraying more of these horrible chemicals on ourselves and on our food. That's just craziness.
We've got to go back to local. Sustainable local. Well, that's our job here, you know.
That's
you're
right.
certainly on the cutting edge there, Christine, with what you're doing, and certainly the chickens are all on the cutting edge.
They are. They certainly know what they're doing. You know, Pat, my husband was looking at your chicken tractor book the other day, and he started building us a little chicken tractor for our yard, which is
sort of
overgrown.
Oh, you got him to do it.
Yes, yes, it's the next project, and it's not
Excellent.
Quite done yet, but it was done enough to put the girls in it for a couple of hours the other day, and boy, did they love it.
Yeah, oh yeah, they'll get that fresh grass and go crazy over it. Well,
they were
just, don't forget to put the door in it too, just a little pop-hole door, because they'll get so they come and go in there. I know you don't have a perimeter fence around your yard, but it's they don't wander far.
No, they don't. They don't. And even, you know, that's one of the points that isn't quite refined yet of getting them from their regular run into the tractor, but they have figured it out, you know, and they kind of are familiar with it, and if they go the wrong way, they turn around and come back, so.
Oh,
you
just
know,
touch a little bit of, toss a little bit of scratch in there, and they'll go right in.
Oh, yeah, and they love it. They were having such a good time in there, so we're working on getting them to, putting them to work as lawnmowers as well around here.
Sure. Yeah, and they love grass. They'll seek out grass if they haven't had some for, rather than just about anything else, if they haven't had
absolutely.
Any for a while. Well, good. I'm glad to hear you're getting your chicken tractor bottle going. Rev it up. Put it on.
That's right. That's right. Well, and that's been something I was surprised that I had to explain so much to people that they, well, like we say, you know, if they've never even seen a live chicken before, they are certainly unprepared for chicken behavior and the way chickens scratch and keep themselves going and how assiduous they are at their work of scratching and pecking.
Yes,
so,
yes, they're wonderful workers, absolutely
yes,
tireless.
Yes, they are.
Almost. I mean, they take
yes.
their afternoon siestas, but they'll be right back up at it after the heat of the day passes.
Well, we were out at Cal Poly. That's our local university here, California State Polytechnic University. And they've had a rough time of it. You know, a couple of years ago, they had Michael Pollan out for a speaker. And because
uh-huh.
They get so much funding from the industry, specifically
uh-oh.
From Harris Ranch. Yes, Harris Ranch had a fit, and they said they were... not they were going to hold back on a $500,000 donation they were about to make.
Are you serious?
Oh,
because
I'm,
Michael Pollan spoke?
Because
oh my
he
God.
Was speaking. Yeah, I posted it on my blog, but I will I'll repost that today too.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was,
and we think that the universities are open information and hire always a cutting edge again, but they're really controlled so much by the grants and by the donors.
Well, that's
who tend
true.
To be political and industrial.
That's true, and as we, you know, struggle with these hard times and funding to education is reduced, that makes these educational institutions yet more vulnerable to
yeah.
exactly that kind of risk of being funded entirely by corporations.
Yep. Yep.
So, anyway, they a lot of things were ended. They stopped their organic farm CSA. They,
are you serious, too?
Yeah, they did. They just completely stopped it. They no longer have a CSA. And we'd been members of that for years, and now we're members of another one, which is fine. But it was too bad that the students lost that. And then they got a new president of the university, who is another commercial ag guy. So, you know, we kind of were concerned about what direction this school is going to go. The main focus of the school is engineering, really, with agriculture sort of secondary, but agriculture is a main part of their campus. They have a big beef program and a big dairy program, as well as a large poultry program, and which, of course, is all under roof and entirely. I've talked to the head of the program over there, and he says he's said that he wants me to come over and speak, but you know what? The time has never been right, so I've never spoken over there, so I kind of hear that with a grain of salt. But he said, you know, I have nothing to show my students but a plain white chicken, and I'd really like them to know that there's other kinds of chickens out there. Anyway, that's another. We were out there last weekend, not for chickens, but for their new compost operation. They have just started a compost operation there, which they did not have before. This may be hard to imagine in a modern agricultural school, but they didn't, and that was what the other discussion was kind of prefacing, giving some backstory as to why they would not have this. But they do have a Center for Sustainable Agriculture there, and they are working to try and get some things going. So they've got these students working on composting the manure from these beef and dairy and the horse operations. They have a large equine center. So they're doing a good job, and they're very earnest. Now, it was very sweet, but it turns out that they are not able to use the poultry manure in their compost because it's too high in salt as well as too high in nitrogen for them, which that struck me as something that I had never heard before. And I need to look into why their poultry manure would be high in salt. I'm not sure what they're feeding them. But it is good to see that they are moving in that direction, and they're trying to set up. There's some consciousness over there about the need for topsoil and the need for composting and for closing that carbon-nitrogen loop of table scraps and food waste and increasing the topsoil and the productivity of the crops. They were very nice young people. I asked them whether they had gotten involved at all in using food waste in their compost, and they said it was something of a sore point that they wanted to, and they had started using that and collecting it. And it was actually the poultry department that brought that to a halt, because this was a couple of years ago when the avian influenza scare was on, and the food waste was attracting birds to it. And the poultry people became convinced that these birds could bring avian influenza to their poultry operation, and so the compost people were required to stop using it. Now, consider it, you know, it's sad when this happens at an institution that's educational and is supposed to be science-based, that they would not rely on more scientific discernment regarding the information about avian influenza, which, despite all those wild statements, has not proven to result in bodies lining the streets and has, in fact, not been transmitted by any migratory birds. But this was their fear at the time, and so they were required to stop using it. So they're interested in it. You know, I promised to send them some information about Vermont Composting Company, which they weren't aware of. That's actually on my list for today, is to write up a blog post about that, which I haven't quite gotten to yet, but I hope I will after this conversation. Of course, he uses Australorps out there at Vermont Composting Company. Those are very nice birds, and certainly very satisfactory. That's another nice big bird, developed as an egg breed, but certainly produces a large size carcass. So that's sort of in line with the Buckeye discussion and the Lamonas that we were talking about. The Lamona is not as large as a Buckeye, but the Lamonas are 8 pounds for roosters and 6.5 pounds for hens, so that's certainly much larger than the Leghorn that it comes from. Not quite as large as the Dorking, but makes a nice, good-sized table bird.
Cool. Yeah, we lost Pat. She was traveling, and so she probably went into an area with no service. She is no longer in the queue.
I'm sure she'll turn up. She always
Maybe so.
Does.
She'll make it into a different area, and then try to give us a call back in. I'll just monitor the switchboard here. So very cool. That's you know, interesting. You've got Joel Salatin, you know, and of course I hadn't heard that name in probably a little while about what was his name you mentioned? Pollen.
Michael Pollen.
Michael, yeah, exactly, yeah. And so I used to see his name all over the place. And then of course, I think Joel, I saw his name, you know, quite frequently. But I haven't been following much of what Michael's been doing lately.
Well, you know, he's still teaching at the university. He's sort of re-mined his data for some other publications that he has out. He hasn't been as vocal lately as he was for a while. Of course, he worked with Joel Salatin. He was the one who kind of helped bring Joel Salatin to public view in his book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, by featuring Joel's Polyface Farms. And Joel, of course, is a great publicity man himself, so
right,
he certainly is not shy and is eager to get out there. And he does a great job.
Yeah, I think you spoke at the Georgia Organics Conference a couple of years ago. I was kind of bummed that I missed it. I think it was down in Savannah, Georgia. So, but yeah, that's why he mentioned that I didn't have to go and go and visit some of his sites again and get reacquainted, because I did see, you know, he just hadn't been very, I guess, vocal lately. I hadn't seen much articles written, you know, on the newswire that I get, or even on Facebook much anymore. Joel, kind of see a lot more with Joel. And that was a great trip. We went up there and did an event in near Pat, and got to stop by Polyface, and it was an experience. He practices, you know, what he preaches, and just, we were there, and it was hard enough just to introduce myself and shake his hand, because he was just working away. You know, we were out at the front. His wife was planting some plants around the front entrance of the farm, and talked with her. She was fabulous. And then hear him and his sons come, and a couple of workers, and just, you know, coming down the hill on the tractor. They were up, you know, clearing a spot to build a little cabin or something for all of his, the students that come and work for him.
Interns?
Over the summer. Interns, yeah. They're kind of clearing a spot to build a place for the intern facility. So it was pretty interesting. But, God, he was so busy. It was just hard enough to – he was working on a big chicken tractor when we were there, too. He had the frame built and was still waiting to put, I think, an axle on it and things. It was a big old tractor, and he had a lot of – I think they were barred rocks at the time, just a huge huge area full of bullets. They looked like they were probably about 12, maybe 15 weeks old, getting ready to go out to, pasture. But it was quite an experience. We enjoyed meeting him and seeing his operation there, and the way Pat describes it, about how it was kind of, his land really a lot was just kind of rock and barren and couldn't grow much. And over the years, he just worked it and added more compost and to what it's at today. It's really amazing.
Well, it is, and he's a real hard worker. He's a smart guy, and he's, you know, certainly been doing this a long time. I do disagree with him. He often uses hybrid modern breed in his chickens, and he makes the case that this is a step toward, you know, this is yet another step in domestication. I would differ with him on that. But, you know, this is a small point as far as I'm concerned. He's doing so much good, and there's certainly plenty of room for differences of opinion like this within sustainable agriculture. That's really what it's about, is people getting involved and doing things and finding what does work for them. And it may be different, and we may come to different conclusions, and that's fine, as long as the conclusion we come to is not, you know, let's spray the fields with Agent Orange. I think that we can agree that that's probably not a good thing, although obviously it's good for the shareholders, you know, and as we have these, we're in kind of quirky times where we have this legal definition that makes corporations people. And, you know, that's a major problem that needs to be corrected, because that kind of allows Dow Chemical to it's so ridiculous, I can hardly imagine it, that Dow Chemical would be the same as you or I. You know, there's obviously a little bit different, but that's where we are right now, and we'll hope for some progress on changing that that as time goes on and as we see the results of that. So, and that's one good thing, you know, as we work these things through.
Yeah, speaking of opinions, there's an awesome thread right now on my Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. I posted an article from Chickens in the News this morning from care2.com. It's kind of a vegan organization, and they think that no one should harm any animals at all for food, and they have their agenda and whatnot. And so I posted on here that they had an article about 3 pages long called "What's Wrong with Backyard Chickens?" And it's basically a 3-page attack on, you know, backyard chickens and the people that keep them, and, you know, trying to push their non-meat agenda, I guess. And so, you know, I basically put down here, and I'll wrap it up with the point I'm trying to make here. And I put, you know, last time I checked, and in fact, I had a quote in there that said, what gives us the right to actually eat these animals in the first place? You know, that something like that. And so my comment when I posted the link was, last time I checked, plants were living things too. Who gives them the right to eat plants? And then I put, I wonder how many people that support this group wear leather shoes and belts or have actually leather seats in their cars. And then I put, I wonder how many trees had to be murdered by a chainsaw for the furniture that's actually in their homes right now. So, you know, everybody had, and I didn't do that to be mean, but it's just kind of to make my point, you know, is that, you know, I would, you know, it's kind of like when someone says, we need to buy America, and they post something, you know, they post on their Facebook page, you should buy American. Why did you buy that Toyota? While they're typing that on a computer that was made in China, they're probably wearing clothes that were made in Indonesia, and, that type of issue. So, I mean, yes, we can have our support group and what we want to do, and you know, I think we should try buy as American as much as we can while you type that on a computer and talk on a phone that's made in China or Japan. So it's and so here this group's talking all about, you know, you shouldn't eat meat, but yet some of them I'm sure are probably wearing leather shoes, have leather seats in their Lexus, and you know, have wood furniture that they killed many living things for their furniture. And someone made a good point in there, for them to eat all the vegetables, there has to be many and multiple killings of snails and bugs and insects and other things in order for those crops to live that they're eating. So now I kind of posted it that way in a point, but it's already got about 73 comments on that post about you know, what's wrong with backyard eggs, and then they had to go on with 3 pages of their of a lot of it, you know, non and pointless and made up information to support their agenda of, you know, you shouldn't eat eggs from chickens, whether they're in your backyard or not. So, like you were saying, the point was, you know, that he talks about using hybrids, and like I said, everybody's got their opinion. They're like ears. Everybody's got one, and they're all a little bit different. So, and that was kind of, I think, related to this issue about this post about what's wrong with backyard eggs, and they try to find all these little things that they feel that's wrong about the small backyard poultry industry, and it always comes up about the roosters, that nobody wants them, and so they end up getting culled at the hatchery, and the way they get culled, and, you know, right or wrong, I tell folks this, and then post it on Facebook, Christine, you know, this is that, you know, the whether it be right or wrong, grinding the chicks is an approved, whether you like it or not, it's approved by just about every single basically humane agency that's out there that governs that as instant culling, instant kill, instant death is what they try to achieve, and then grinding does that. So whether you like it or not, it's approved by 14 different agencies that are out there that dictate basically how these hatcheries can, you know, call the chickens or the baby chick. So it's, you know, nothing's going to be perfect. I can preach about buying American while I talk to you on my phone that was made in Japan and wear my shoes that are probably made in Indonesia and type on my computer that was made in China. But yet I can still spout out, buy American. When I go and buy a Ford Mustang and 60% of it is made not here in America, it's just hard to do that. So, I mean, we can all have our, you know, like you're saying, with the height, you know, we can all have our beliefs and our pick our battles, but none of it's going to be perfect. There's no such thing anymore. There'll always be some type of loophole or attack here or attack there, something that's not going to be absolutely peachy and keen. So, so it's all.
Well, you know, I think that they are opening that discussion, and I value the vegan input. I think that eating vegan and being vegan, and most of the vegans I know do take it quite seriously, and that they do avoid leather clothing and those things, and they have very good hearts, and they are trying to do their best. And I think it's worthwhile that to have them out there to focus some attention on the subject and to take a that point of view. They're at the edge of something. I negotiate that line myself. I certainly would not eat any chicken that I had known by name, although I still do eat meat. But I think that this is just a real broad tent, and I think that there's plenty of space under it for a variety of viewpoints. And I don't think that I don't think it's something that you know, I'm not about to start defending macerators, but I see that kind of thing is like Joel Salatin pointing out that, you know, if everyone's keeping their own chickens and raising their own eggs, we don't have to worry about macerating male chicks.
Exactly.
You know, that problem just disappears because we will have the amount of chickens that we need instead of over hatching these huge numbers. You know, and it's the same thing with the chicken manure. You know, if we raise reasonable numbers of these and they're spread out over the landscape, we're not going to have these huge manure ponds and problems with manure polluting the landscape and the surface water and all these terrible problems. So, you know, I look on the macerators as sort of like the Agent Orange corn. You know, it's like this is a solution to a problem that we shouldn't be having. And, you know, I think it's good to be horrified by terrible solutions like this. I think that the vegan discussion is one that's definitely worth having, and it's worth engaging those ideas and, you know, kind of talking them through and saying, well, where do I stand on this, you know? At what point is it okay? You know, maybe, you know, how about those plants? How about those insects? Where do we draw those lines? Those are really interesting philosophical questions, and I'm always grateful to people to bringing that up.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with chickens. You know, all of them listen to the show. We have vegetarians listen to the show, vegans listen to the show, people who have pet chickens that are named, that they love them, and they're still buying chicken from the Piggly Wiggly down the street. You've got folks that, you know, they go out there and they give, you know, laying pellets to their hens every day. That's all they get. No treats, no scraps, no nothing. And then you have people every single day that fix warm oatmeal and blueberries every day and take out to their beloved chickens. And they're in diapers and they're inside the house and they're named and they drive down the street with them in their car. So, again, it's all the, whether you want to call that extreme or not, but it's, you know, it's the extremes. It's everybody's opinion on how they, like I said, have the hobby or whether they're vegan or not. I think it comes down to, like someone had posted in the chat room, actually shoving their opinion down our throats, no pun intended, versus just, you know, educating and sharing what their views are versus saying, well, you're wrong and I'm right, or, you know, that type of thing. And there's, of course, a fine line there between what's factual information and what's opinion. I think that's an issue, too, because a lot of times I'll post when someone says something like, pumpkin seed will work wonders and eliminate internal parasites from your chickens. Oh, really? Is that factual information or your opinion? What studies do you have to prove this? Or is it just, you know, your opinion that you've given them and haven't seen worms yet since you've had chickens because you've been giving pumpkin seeds, even though they may be full of worms, you just can't see them. So I think there's a fine line between, you know, like, you know, opinions and then forcing your opinion down someone's throat, and then what's factual and what's opinion or what's, you know, lifestyle and factual information. So it all has to get along, hopefully, you know, pleasantly, and people can read between the lines and see what's factual and rumor and opinion and what's constructive criticism and what's not. So that's
right.
You know,
that's right. And it is important to have some faith in facts and to know how to search out facts. And, you know, that's what I spend a lot of my time doing as far as researching the writing that I do, is to find out, you know, this actually came up the other day with an assertion that I saw, and I just wasn't sure about it. And I looked around online, and I started seeing the same paragraph posted and reposted everywhere, and I couldn't find any other kind of confirmation of it, and I dropped it. You know, it might be true, but one of the things that happens online is that, you know, something will sound good, and it'll sound like something that could be true or you wish were true, and it might be true. But if you can't verify those facts, you just don't know, you know, until you can actually find someone who has the experience or has actually gone through that or whatever.
Someone had posted in the chat room, not factual, just works for me. And I can have a perfect example of that. I'll talk about, hey, Jen and I, in the summer months, we'll put apple cider vinegar in our big plastic waterers because it keeps down the a little bit of the algae and that grows in there, this lime that, you know, and whatnot in between, the water, you know, replacing the water and cleaning the waters and things like that. Hang on just a second. I got a sleepy boy in my arms that's trying to lay down trying to accommodate his nap time in here. So I'll say something like, well, you know, we use apple cider vinegar because it eliminates the slime in our waters during the hot summer months. And then someone like Bridget McCrae, love her to death, would say, show me the proof. And I said, well, I see the proof in my own eyes every summer over the last decade of doing this. Whether there's a study out there or not that says it, I've experienced this every single day for 3 months, 4 months out of the year in my own backyard. So, again, yeah, maybe not factual, but it works for me. It may work for you.
Well,
you can try it.
That's right. And, you know, the fact that no one's tested that doesn't mean it's not true either.
Right.
You know, someone who's in a position of extension as she is, that's certainly worth checking out, and it would be nice if she could spark some interest in actually doing some studies of that. But until then, you know, it's something that she could keep in her arsenal too. She could try it herself and with her own birds, and she can, you know, I do that a lot with people. I'll suggest, well, maybe try this, maybe that'll work, maybe
yeah,
this will work.
Yeah.
You know, someone came in the other day at the Earth Day discussion and said, well, I've got these little red mites on my bird's comb. I had never heard of this, but one of the other people there had, I don't remember exactly what, some kind of fleas or something. Anyway, you know, we entered into a discussion, you know, and talked about permethrins might be good. Someone else said, well, there's, you know, you can use some cat or dog flea repellent, flea powder, some chemicals. I suggested also just using some Vaseline or some Vicks because that can sometimes work with on soft tissues that prevents the insect from gaining a hold. It's kind of a mechanical way. And, you know, any or all of those are worth trying. And it just depends on the situation. And I'm not sure which one is going to work. And as we all know, in different situations, different things work, and we're not always sure exactly what the factors were that went into that. And that's true medically too. You know, there's very few things that they say, oh, this was 100% effective. You know, usually something's considered effective if it's around 50 or 60% effective for infestations or whatever. So, you know, you just kind of have to have a toolbox of possibilities. And if one works, you know, I always like to try the least problematic one first, try some Vaseline, you know, and work your way up to that chemical solution. And if nothing else works, that, in my mind, is what those chemicals are there for. They're a last resort. They will work, ultimately. And if we all use them that way, there wouldn't be that much chemical burden out there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the last resort. Try this, try that. Just like with, you know, diatomaceous earth and the lack of studies that are out there for that or the skewed studies and people, you know. And so my, I guess, official opinion would be when people ask is that, you know, I don't
really have a problem if you want to, you know, add a little bit of diatomaceous earth to your feed, or, you know, dust with it, or, you know, nesting boxes or in your coop or whatnot, or, and again, add it maybe in your feed to maybe work as a preventative. But I, you know, I think that if you do have a confirmed outbreak of internal parasites, you probably need to use something a little bit more than just DE to try to get rid of those.
Exactly right.
So that's come up when people, DE, for example, my kind of official opinion on that is, you know, maybe as a maintenance regime, sure, but when you've got an outbreak, it's time to get professional and get, you know, get, and then again, what the kind of thing is, what do you use then? We've had this debate a lot and on the show about then what do you use, and if you could you use it on layers? You know, there's no withdrawal period for WASI. It doesn't exist for layers. In fact, it says do not use for layers. Even though there's probably, and experts agree, yes, there's probably a withdrawal period, but no one's going to do the study for it because that costs money. And so we speculate, we assume, with my professional experience, we would guess that it's 28 days or whatever it is. And that's fine if people want to do that at 28, but I think people also need to know that that's speculation. In 28 days, it still may not be, you know, and so yeah, here's, you know, the information, do with it with what you want to do with it, and then that this is our, you know, guesstimation of what the withdrawal period might be based on. If it's 28 days for meat, well, then maybe that's okay for eggs, but we don't know because it's not a study. So you take this information and do with it what you wish. So, yeah, there's a lot of, gosh, life is full of what ifs and decisions that we have to make, and it wouldn't be life if it wasn't. We've all
been That's right.
bad decisions.
That's right.
We've made good decisions, and hindsight is 20/20. So it's one of those things. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you on. I'm sorry, Pat, and of course she was on the road. So glad she joined us while she could today. And I guess she's coming through the mountains there and lost a signal. But maybe she'll be, sounded like she may be joining us tomorrow with Peter Brown and our continued series on the art of incubation. So maybe she'll join us next time. And looking at my calendar, I think we'll be all set for, I think, May, which is the 4th. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Actually, there's 5 Tuesdays in May, but you'll be there May 22nd, I think, is your next assigned date. So we'll talk before then, I'm sure, and get a topic for that time out.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Andy. Always a pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us, Christine. Wish you all the best luck over the next 30 days, and we'll see you again here next month.
Okay, we will be back. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All righty, great show today, and I thank you for being patient with me. And unfortunately, Pat, again, she was on the road coming back from her mom's 94th birthday. Congratulations and happy birthday. Very, very cool. I wonder what her, I don't think we share the same birthday. My birthday was the 22nd, Earth Day, which was Sunday. I think hers was earlier in the week, so I don't think we share actually a birthday. But I turned the big 43 on Sunday. So we went after planting half the garden on, I think it was Friday. My body was telling me that I was 43 or a lazy 43 that I needed to get to work a little bit more. It wouldn't hurt so much when I wake up the next day. Oh, gotta love it. Let me get back to the chat room and say hello to everybody. Speaking of that, let me go ahead and talk a little bit. I want to say thank you very much for all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show on a regular basis. Thanks to all the homeschoolers that tune in and listen on a daily basis and incorporate this radio show with their curriculum, and want to thank all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this show live every day for their customers. We thank you very much. Hope you're having a successful Chick Days, and we appreciate that. So very, very good. We thank you for listening. Just a reminder, tomorrow we're going to welcome Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. He will continue talking about the art of incubation. It's this several-part series. Three or four part series of the Art of Incubation. And so he'll be joining us tomorrow. And then Thursday, poultry scientist, PhD professor, small flock specialist, Bridget McCray will be joining us. And then another fun Friday. And I think we may have an actual cool and new guest host for us on Friday who won a prize to co-host the show. And I think that'll be Thursday. And we've got some prizes to give away today. Let me get back. If you'll give me just a second, I'll try to go see if I can do 16 things at once, hold my sleeping 10-month-old, because I've got babysitting duties this week, even through the radio show, because Jen is with her job testing students. And so I'll see if I can't run a few commercials while I go and try to get today's prize up and let you know what that is, and then we can have a we'll have a contest here in just momentarily. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back after this short break, and we'll have some contests where we give away a couple of prizes. Stay tuned.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Great show today with author Christine Heinrich, author of How to Raise Chickens and How to Raise Poultry. You can visit her her website, and then that'll give you access to her blog, and that is poultrybookstore.com. www.poultrybookstore.com, and just go over there and check that out. So we appreciate you if you want to do that. All righty, it is Tuesday. Every Tuesday is brought to you by EggCartons.com. Who doesn't love EggCartons.com? And Wendy's contacted me, and we're going to go ahead and give away 25. These are so popular. We love giving them away. 25 vintage-style egg cartons from EggCartons.com. That's right. 25 of their vintage-style egg cartons. Not the 6x6, the two rows of six. This is three rows of four, say for your dozen eggs, and three rows of four. Very, very popular. Some of you may actually remember these at Grandma's house, but they've become had a huge comeback, and so they started manufacturing these to give folks a little blast from the past, if you will. So we've got a 25 vintage style egg cartons from eggcartons.com to caller number, we're going to take caller number six. Caller number six, if you can tell me the breed of the topic today, what breed we talked about today, and who was the developer of that breed, 347-637-3237. Got it? 347-637-3237. If you can tell me what breed we talked about today with Christine Heinrich and who developed the breed, last name will be fine. 347, first name would be even better. 347-637-3237. We're going to take call number six. So call that number, 347-637-3237. If you're caller number six and know the answer to the question, which was what breed did we talk about today and who developed it, you're going to win 25 awesome vintage style egg cartons from eggcartons.com. Gotta love it. We encourage you all to follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. We're quickly approaching 17,000 Facebook fans. We're quickly approaching 5,000 Twitter followers. You can follow us on Twitter at Backyard Poultry. There it is, at Backyard Poultry there on Twitter. And we encourage you to do that and encourage you to tune in every day, Monday through Friday, right here on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring the experts in their field on to talk about, you name it, backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. Again, 347-637-3237, 347-637-3237. Give us a call, call number six. What breed did we talk about today and who developed it? Let's see who is paying attention. See who is paying attention today. Call number six, 347-637-3237. And we'll see who was paying attention today. Make sure you bring your spiral notebook tomorrow for the continuation of The Art of Incubation with Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. It's fabulous information. You can take lots of notes. Of course, if you can't, you can always listen to the archive. This show is archived. We've got over 600 episodes now that are archived. And you can, of course, see all the episodes at, of course, blogtalkradio.com. But they're also posted for free at iTunes.com, podcast.com, and a very popular one, Zune.com. We had never heard of it. We had several requests. Hey, can you get your archive shows at Zune.com? And we said, I think so, and we did. So we're at Zune.com as well and several other places.
And we've tried to maintain, at least in 2012, documenting what the shows are about in the topic area. So you can go back and search. We did this for a while, and it kind of got really busy, and we didn't for a while, so it's kind of potlucky. Start listening to the show and do see what it's all about. But we made it a pact and for 2012 that we try to post the subject matter on every podcast, so you'll be able to see if that topic may actually interest you or not before you click play. Even though it's free, we try to do that in 2012 for all of our listeners. All right, let's go to the phone lines here and see who feels lucky today. This phone system will work again. I'm on the road. Sometimes it's a little difficult to do things differently than you're comfortable with. So here we go. Caller calling in, number 6 from area code 810. 810, you're live on the air. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please.
Hi, it's New Dawn Farm Girl.
New Dawn Farm Girl. What state are you calling from? Are you in Florida?
Michigan. Nope, I'm in Michigan.
Oh, boy, was I wrong about halfway across the country. Hey, did y'all get snow up there this past couple of days?
No, but it felt like it was going to snow.
Okay, I was thinking maybe
it was really cold.
A little further east, they're looking at, you know, a foot of snow in late April, and I'm truly amazed. Of course, it's the last couple of days. It's been really windy here, gusts 35 miles an hour, and chilly. It's been cold here, too, a little cold front come through. I guess they call this, a blackberry winter. You know, everybody goes out and gets their crops planted, and the next thing you know, here it comes. That's why Grandpa said, best not plant before Good Friday, even though Good Friday was quite a long ago, and we still got a blackberry winter, as they call it. So for, of course, 25 vintage style egg cartons from eggcartons.com, tell us what breed we talked about today and who developed that breed.
Okay, I hope I pronounce it right. It was Lamana.
Okay.
And Harry S. Lehman? Lamin?
There you go. Yeah, we'll absolutely take that. That's absolutely
okay,
no
I murdered it.
we all do. There's some out there that I'm like, okay, we're going to be talking today, about, especially when Peter Brown's on and he starts throwing out all these diseases and all these names and all these things and symptoms. If you can spell that, you'll get a bonus. I mean, if you can spell it like he pronounced it, then you can get a bonus prize. So, oh, my goodness. But, congratulations, and we appreciate you tuning in and listening up there in Michigan. And I believe you're very, very welcome. Thank you for tuning in. And all you got to do to claim your prize is send me an email. That's it. How hard is that? You've already won it. Just send me an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.com. That's .net. I don't know why we got set up on that, because someone was telling me, IT guy, whoever, that put all your emails on .net and have everything, have your website .com, and there's a purpose for that. But so chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net is the email, all of our email contest, everything. chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and then in the subject line, if you'll put egg cartons winner. And then I'll need your name, shipping address, phone number, and email, and the email itself. So I can copy and paste that and just forward it over to wendy@eggcartons.com. Name, shipping address, phone number, and your email. And we'll get that out to you absolutely as soon as we can. So very, very cool. 25 awesome vintage-style egg cartons to impress your friends. So very, very cool. Congratulations to you, and thank you very much for listening. And that's going to wrap up another show of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We thank you so much for tuning in today, and we hope you can tune in tomorrow for Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, and Incubation. Thursday, Poultry Scientist Dr. McCray. Friday, we've got a great fun Friday. We'll be giving away a lot of prizes. And, again, every single day I've got my my new co-host, my little 10-month-old son, who during the show today just wore him out and being co-host, and he is now napping here next to me. So sweet. And so hearing a little goo-goo and a little gaga and a little whining and a little this in the background, it's just Pat. It's just my son, Caleb. I love you, Pat. You're a doll. It's Caleb. So it'll be interesting for the rest of the week, especially Fun Friday when we got to go to the phone lines a lot and have a new co-host, and I'm holding him, and it's gonna be a great time. It's gonna be a great time. So hey, family oriented show. That's what we're all about. Thank you very much for tuning in. We hope you can tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio for another episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you very much for tuning in, folks. Love you all.